say hello to Jasmine.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
And hello to Eros.
Hi.
Hey.
Thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. And Dante, hi to you.
How's it going?
It's going really well, and thank you for asking. It's been a good day so far, except for this Holly Near matter of airplanes and airports and God knows Friday traffic getting... Yeah, when you guys, you live in Olympia, so if you go to the airport, you have your own I-5 issue.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, people coming around the end of the canal have I-5 to deal with, and then the Narrows Bridge.
Oh, yeah.
But we're going to hope Holly can make it. And with that, Jasmine, we talked last time about, where did we stop in your life story? You remember? I know where we started, and I'm happy just to go about it that way.
Sure.
We started with Saudi Arabia, where
we
you
did,
were born.
Yeah, we did. And I think we stopped somewhere around the time that I moved here and started my life here and had these kids. And I think that's kind of where we left off.
And where were these guys born?
Both born in Wyoming. Dante was born in Rock Springs, Wyoming, and Eros was born in Laramie, Wyoming.
You guys remember Wyoming at all?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Did you like it?
Not as much as here, but yeah, I liked it.
How about you, Dante?
Yeah, I agree pretty much. It was a very small town, and I'm one to generally like bigger cities, but it was great. Wyoming was super great place to grow up, super accepting community, just everyone's super friendly and all that. So it was a good time.
So, your husband died.
Yes.
And how did you get to Olympia? Why Olympia?
Well, I was ready to expand a little more. Like the boys said, Wyoming, where we lived, Laramie, was a wonderful town, beautiful community, but it was a little small. And they were starting to really, develop a lot of interest in different arts. And because they were homeschooled, I felt like the only way I could get them to expose themselves to some of those things that they loved was to travel to Denver or Fort Collins. And so I wanted to move somewhere where I knew there was a greater richness of the arts. And my sister was moving to the United States from Saudi Arabia, and she was landing in Oregon. Her first destination was Corvallis, and eventually now she's in Portland. And so I thought, the Northwest was a beautiful place to check out, not only naturally, but and then the Evergreen College was also a little bit of an attraction. I loved their model, and I figured it would be a good place to explore for the boys once they were older, and for myself, because I'm back in school, and that's where I'm going at the moment. But in the meantime, I also reconnected with a person that I was, developing this beautiful friendship with, and eventually moved out here. He lived in Olympia, and we started dating,
and
he's my husband now.
Mr. Dickerson, what's his first name?
Tom
Dickerson. Mm-hmm. I did meet him when
you first came
some time ago.
Yep.
Okay, well, that's fine. We have ourselves in Olympia, and we have to really what we're going to talk about today, which is cancer.
Yes.
And I will tell you, yesterday I learned that two of my friends were diagnosed with cancer. And one, a fresh diagnosis. Mm. I don't think she knew.
Mm.
I got an email about her yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I went to a store in Port Townsend, and there was Ruthie with a hat on and no hair.
Wow.
So two in one day. And my wife also was a chemotherapy nurse. So I have this going by me all the time.
Yep.
But you approach the matter differently. You are a certified holistic cancer coach.
I am.
But this came to you because cancer came to you.
Yes. So just briefly, the journey with cancer was an unbelievably unexpected and quite, it was an awakening journey for sure. I have to tell this part of the story. When I was very, very young, I was about 11 or 12, and I was in school, and I still had no idea what cancer was. I mean, Saudi Arabia is very conservative with emotions in general, and a lot of this stuff sort of stays taboo, and I don't remember hearing about people getting sick or dying from sickness. And I do remember my mom had an Italian medical encyclopedia, and it freaked me out. I hated looking at that thing because every time I opened it, there were pictures of diseases. And the joke is now that that book really terrified me and started my hypochondria. And around the age of 11 or 12, I heard of a friend that was in school. She was a little older than me, but she had cancer, the big word, and she had a brain tumor. She was 13, and watching her decline was really, really traumatic for me. I had no ways of expressing what I was feeling, putting words to the feelings. It was just a very, very, very challenging and emotional journey. When she passed away, I think many of us were traumatized. I internalized a lot of that trauma. And I remember just basically from that day on being terrified of the word cancer, of the idea of what cancer is. To me, it was a death sentence because that's all I knew. And basically waited for it to strike closer to home. And of course, as the years went by, as the decades went by, everyone was, you know, being affected by it in some shape or form. And I really got into the whole New Age movement with my mom and the Louise Hay thing, and really believing that disease in general is usually a lesson, not in every single case, but in the majority of cases. And so, to make a long story short, my move to the United States was a wonderful move, but it came with a lot of challenges. My life with their father was a wonderful life, but it came with a lot of challenges. There's a lot of emotional trauma. And I didn't mention this last time, and I've gotten permission from the boys to talk about it a little more openly, but their father committed suicide. And so that was a very, very emotionally traumatic experience. And I know that I internalized a lot of, grief and pain, for myself, but primarily so that I could just make sure that they were in a good place and they were able to, you know, go on with their lives and the limited understanding as children that they had. And so I would say 90% of women that get breast cancer, which is what I got, is usually induced as a consequence of an emotional trauma. And even the medical world now accepts that. In fact, when I got my diagnosis, the first question my surgeon asked me was, did you experience a traumatic event in the last 5 years? And I said yes. And so there's a lot of that. And so when it happened, I was not surprised. I was shocked in some ways, but not surprised.
How did you learn you had cancer?
I found the tumor myself. Mm-hmm. I did my self-exam, uh-huh. And I felt something very unusual, and I had a panic moment, and I talked to my husband. He's like, well, the only way to find out is to go and check and go to the doctor, and I have a wonderful naturopath that I see, and took all the steps after that.
Yeah, but that was not the end of the panic, I wouldn't imagine.
No, it was not. At that point, I had no idea what that meant. I was completely oblivious because I had lived with blinders. I didn't want to know anything about it because it terrified me so much. And at that point, when I realized, okay, this is now my story, where do I go from here? Do I just surrender to trust what everybody thinks I ought to do? Or is this a death sentence, in fact? Or how much power do I have in this? And so I drowned myself in everything I could get my hands on that explained to me what it was, what was happening, why it was happening emotionally, physically, mentally, and then, you know, what to do to get, you know, to where I need to.
So a bit over a year ago, I was diagnosed with a kind of skin cancer.
Mm.
Not just the usual, but described to me as being, the word was aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's the word they use.
That's the word they use. And, you know, I can't use the words on the air that I think of, but it scared me. Mm-hmm. You know what? I mean, I have never felt that kind of, worry.
Yeah.
That kind of worry.
Sure.
And, you know, I dealt with it in a very conventional way. I mm-hmm. got the top of my head and the big hole in my head now. Mm-hmm. That's how I dealt with mm-hmm. it. And then everything went away, apparently.
Sure.
How'd you deal with it?
So I did a combo of conventional and alternative therapies. I did have surgery. I had a lumpectomy. And then I had minimal radiation. I did not need chemotherapy. They recommend it just because that's their advice. But in my case, it wasn't either or. It wouldn't have made a difference. And so I decided not to go through chemo. I see a wonderful oncologist who's also a naturopath. So I've gotten on a lot of herbs, a lot of basically rebuilding my immune system because my immune system was totally shot. I had adrenal fatigue. I had an imbalance in hormones, which is what triggered it. Mine was 100% estrogen receptor, which most breast cancers that are estrogen related or hormonally related are usually 70-30, 80-20, even 50-50. Mine was 100% estrogen. And so I knew that estrogen was what I needed to address. It had, you know, gotten to a very, very high level in my body. And so I chose, instead of being on medication, which is tamoxifen is what they use, not to, you know, use names of medications, but that's what they usually use for breast cancer. And it blocks estrogen, but it only works 5 years. I was only 41 when I was diagnosed, and so I was pretty far from menopausal age. And so I decided to have my ovaries removed and had an oophorectomy instead. And that brought down the estrogen levels down. And so that's the so conventional, but also not very. It was a little radical. My doctors were not too happy about my decision. Because
I was going to say, where did that idea come from?
I did a lot of research, a lot of research, and it's actually a lot more common. In the early 1900s, that's how they treated every woman's breast cancer successfully, was surgery and then removing the ovaries for women that didn't have intention to have any more kids. And the success rate was very high back in the day, and it's still somewhat practiced in some parts of Europe.
So your oncologist, who's also a naturopath,
I have two. I have one that's a traditional
allopathic.
Two doctors.
I thought you had found one that was both. That would be remarkable.
Well, one is both, but the other is. So I'm choosing to do both Western and naturopathic. So, and they work together. They're great. They're great.
They do help you with, and did not make a terrible bother about your decision.
No, they really trusted me. I think they love patients that are very, very committed to find the answers and get in the driver's seat. I think that's a relief for them as well.
And once the panic settled out, your attitude, what did you do? A positive attitude is mighty important, right?
Absolutely.
What did you do to maintain that attitude?
So when I first got the diagnosis, I remember I was sitting in the parking lot to go see my therapist, and I got the phone call that confirmed
biopsy.
The biopsy, thank you. They confirmed the biopsy, and so I walked into my therapist's office, and of course I cried first thing, and then I said, the first thing I thought was, okay, this is my body. I cannot be angry at my body. And I remember putting my hand on my chest and saying, I love you, thank you, I'm all ears now. What do I need to hear? And I shocked myself, because I thought, before ever hearing a diagnosis, that if I ever heard those words, I would fall apart and bury myself. Like, I literally thought that was the end of the world. And yet when it happened, it's unbelievable how the 30 years that led up to that, all of the study in spiritual growth and evolution and Buddhism and all of that stuff really, really played out, like, so authentically in that moment. And I remember thinking, this is my body. I wrote a letter immediately to my oncologist before ever meeting her, saying that I wanted to treat this as a positive thing. I don't want any of my medical team to use words like battle, cancer battle, fighting, killing. I didn't want any words that were negative in context. And so I said, I'd like to talk about healing, restoring, rejuvenating, you know, those were the words. And they were all very respectful, and they said, absolutely, no problem. And so I remained in that mind frame. So the panic really lasted a few seconds.
Really?
Yeah, I will say that the panic is always around the time of waiting for an answer. That's when, like, waiting for a scan, that's when there's a little bit of that panic. But outside of that, it's education. So I immersed myself in education. I read so many books, heard so many lectures, videos. I devoured everything that was in front of me. And once I understood what cancer was, it wasn't scary anymore. The word cancer, carcinoma, aggressive, all these words, which I used to, like, freak out if I even heard a whisper of them. And now they're just words. Like, it's like we give them power.
I'm talking to Jasmine Flock Dickerson. She brought with her two sons. We've done this before, and we get them to play some music. But before they play music, I have a question for each of them, and you may choose not to answer, of course. But how long ago was this? Three years ago. Mm-hmm. So both of you were plenty old enough to know what was going on. So I'll ask Eros first. What was this like for you? It was not your cancer.
No, but I don't know. I guess, like, at first, especially, it was pretty, like, scary and, like, caught me off guard. But then, like, I guess since she did, like, a lot of her own research and stuff and really understood it, I was, like, yeah, I don't know. At first, I was definitely, like, caught off guard, but I kind of calmed down and just, like, understood what exactly it was and that it wasn't a huge deal because she'd done like a lot of research and all that, so I just kind of accepted it, I guess.
Dante, how about you?
I honestly like didn't really think it was a big deal right off the bat. Like, I was like, okay, well, you get through this, it won't be too big a deal. Like, it might take a year or so, and like, that'll be it. I never like had any thoughts of it being super scary. I was like, I mean, so many people go through this. Like, it's almost, it's not even just it's bad, but it's not like a huge terrible thing because so many people go through it at this point. And I was like, you caught it super early. Just, I don't think it'll be that big a deal. And it was a big deal, but it also wasn't that big a deal, if you know what I mean.
You have like, confidence in your mom.
I had a lot of confidence. Like, yeah. At no point did I think anything bad was going to happen. I was like, you'll get through this. No biggie.
And it's true. That's exactly how they reacted.
Yeah.
So we're going to ask for some tunes from you, too. Let me see. Was there anything? Oh, and when we come back after the tunes, we're going to skip to the coaching. That's we know your background now enough to make the coaching make extra special sense. Gentlemen, what are you going to play?
We're going to play two Irish reels. The first one is called Tuttle's Reel, and the second is The New Custom House. Thank you.
just one question I'm going to ask you to just to carry on. And the question is, when you guys busk, and I know you do, do you find that people start dancing while you're playing?
Oftentimes, yeah, that does happen.
What's next?
Three jigs. The first two are original compositions. I wrote the first one. It's called Monty's Jig. And the second one is written by Dante, called The Queen's Jig. And the last is a traditional one called The Hare and the Corn.
Thank you. It's been about a year, hasn't it, since you were here the first time?
Yeah, about, I think.
Was it
like,
March?
You were here, you've been here twice. Mm-hmm. Three times, counting today.
Yeah, I think the first time was about 6 months ago.
You guys are playing stronger than you were, whenever that was, and you're picking up steam.
Thank you.
Dante, you took a trip back east recently.
Yeah, both of us did, actually.
Okay.
But yeah.
And in particular for you or for both of you?
In particular for me, because I'm a little bit older than Eros, but it was definitely still for the both of us.
And you went to the Berklee College of Music?
Yes, we did.
Uh-huh. Did you just look around or did you audition?
No, I did not audition or apply yet. I'm not going to be going straight out of high school, so there's no need to do it right away, although I will do it soon. No, we just went toward the campus, looked around, attended some classes. It was definitely a super great, fun thing to do.
And are you interested in going there?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I've been interested in a while, but just going there and actually visiting the campus confirmed my suspicions.
And what will you do for an audition? The music you're playing today, or will they expect classical music, for example?
They won't expect classical music, but they'll expect, like, auditioning, like, over a blues chord progression, or, like, improvising over a blues chord progression. You'll take, like, up to five-minute prepared piece, and then they'll, like, throw some stuff at you. Like, they'll check your sight reading, although that's not necessary to get in, because they'll teach you that otherwise.
Do you sight read?
I'm capable of sight reading. I'm not very good at it, but I'm working on it.
Uh-huh. And how many years until, you say graduate, but you homeschool. I don't know what graduate quite means. I guess your mom will say you're graduated.
Well, that I went to an alternative school in Olympia called Orla. It's like a school for homeschoolers. And then I'm doing the Running Start program at South Puget Sound Community College this year. So I'm taking community college classes while still in high school, and it's a full 15 credit schedule.
So at some point, somebody will say you've graduated from high school and can apply and attend the Berklee College. Somebody will know when the time is right for that.
Yeah.
You in particular, huh? And that's Dante and Eros, by the way, playing fiddle. And we'll hear more from them in about 15 minutes. We'll go back to their mom. This is an interesting package we put together.
Yeah.
And maybe it doesn't have a whole lot of coherence, but I was thinking, do I invite you here so that the boys will come, or invite the boys here so you will come? I'm tickled to have you all.
Thank you.
And we're going to have to think about how we're going to do the next time. What we might have to talk about, we're going to talk now about holistic cancer cancer coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And after your experience and your self-cure, I guess we could say, you wanted to help others. Mm-hmm. Who certified you?
So I got certified. There's an organization called beatcancer.org. And it's an organization that is founded by Susan Silberstein, and she lost her husband in the 70s, and there was very little information at the time, and so she sort of dove into figuring out all the different ways, because honestly, cancer is being treated around the world in third world countries way better than, you know, most of the modern first world countries. To some degree, is doing. And so she developed this organization that blended all the modalities. And the goal of this organization, which is through which I got certified, is to understand all the different healing modalities and helping patients choose what's right for them. Because I think the scariest part of the journey is feeling overwhelmed at first, terrified, and not knowing where to go, what to do, who to trust. Or to trust blindly and not have a say at all. And so the goal is not to dismiss modern medicine and only focus on alternative approaches, but rather viewing it as a holistic thing. And when I say holistic, it's not just holistic medical and alternative modalities, it's holistic as in treating the body holistically. Cancer is an aftermath of something that's gone wrong in the body. It's not something that just appears overnight and decides to, you know, house itself and pay rent and be in your home, in your body. It literally is something went wrong. And so what went wrong? Let's find out what went wrong and how we get there.
And why?
Well, it's different for everybody. And there's different types of cancer. And the other thing is there's hundreds of types of cancers. I remember when I was, you know, undergoing my treatment, my naturopath oncologist, and he practices out of Seattle and comes to Olympia. So he's worked with the cancer centers of, Cancer Centers of America. So he's, you know, he knows what he's doing. And he said that we, unfortunately, the model is it treats all cancer patients the same. But there are cancer patients that need a very, very rigorous and detailed, specific treatment. And then there are those who are a little more casual cancer patients.
And what is his name? It's okay.
My doctor?
Yeah.
Dr. Estjen, Chad Estjen. He's wonderful. He's absolutely wonderful. And so that's one of the things I learned was, okay, so why did cancer happen in this body? And what does this body need to heal? Because we're not trying to cure cancer. We're trying to heal the body. And I think that mind frame can really change
things. And I'd like to hear the distinction.
Yeah. So curing is we are focused on the tumor. Healing is we're focused on the body. So I joke and I make a political comparison all the time. And maybe I'm on live on the radio and it's probably not appropriate, but I will go ahead and say it. So when we have a leader in the country, a country, and we are not very proud of the leader, we're not very supportive of the leader, that's the leader is the symbol of the tumor. The country is the whole body. So instead of focusing on getting rid of that, because it's here for a while, or at least until it's here. So instead of focusing on getting rid of that and only getting rid of that, because that needs to be a focus, we need to focus on everybody else banding together, coming together, and what do we as people need to do to make the adjustments and the changes that we need. And that's kind of the same with the body.
You have my vote.
There you go. Yeah. Okay. So strengthening the cells of the body that are doing the job or trying really hard to do the job instead of the cells of the body that have gone crazy and are not doing their job.
And how do you go about doing that?
So I believe in surgery. I think in cases of tumor that can be easily removed, it's a good way. A lot of people in the alternative modality school of thought don't think that that's even necessary. I think sometimes it's possible not to go that route. For the most part, I think once a tumor has been, you know, proven to be there and it's big enough, I think removing it is a good idea. The radiation is really depending on, you know, what type of cancer and how far it's spread, if it has, or if it's, you know, at risk of spreading. Chemotherapy is an excellent modality for certain types of cancers and for the patient that really believes in it. For patients that don't think it's going to serve them, they are encouraged to explore that. They shouldn't be scared into it. And for patients that really believe in it, it works wonders. Outside of that, I think we need to work on relaxing, calming ourselves, breathing, meditating, appreciating the small things in life, infusing our lives with joy, bringing the stress level down, recognizing what our triggers are emotionally, physically, certainly a healthy diet, exercise, moving your body, really being in tune with all the gifts that we are innately given.
So you have worked with clients. You currently are not doing that, I think you told me.
I'm not doing it very actively, although I do have a couple of clients right now, and yeah.
I'm wondering what you would do with and for a client of yours who smoked.
So smoking is a big one. It's definitely an addiction. And usually, you know, the biggest encouragement is to have them really look at all the ways in which they can successfully quit smoking if they're still actively smoking. If they have smoked, then there are, I mean, I'm not a doctor, so I wouldn't tell them what to do. What I would do in the coaching session would be to provide them with all the information to either meet the right person to work on a specific thing. So smoking is one, diet is another, exercise, stress management. Those are all very, very strong things that affect us. And so my job would be to tell them what is available to them, and then they can choose which one of these feels comfortable. Because some people don't want to give up their Oreos or their Cheetos. And so instead of scaring them into giving up their junk food, you encourage them to introduce other things, and then slowly. It's really, the mind is so much more powerful than the body. And so if we start changing our mind frame as far as how we are viewing ourselves emotionally first, then all the other stuff that's physical comes second. It's a very, very, the journey really begins in the heart and in the mind. And then after that, you can comfortably disconnect from your addictions, from your compulsions and all those things. But until you address what's going on internally, what's triggered your need to have that pull, it's almost impossible.
You have been a coach then for maybe a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And have you lost a client?
No.
Okay. I say that because my wife, as I said, is a chemotherapy nurse. And every year at the end of the year, they get together and have a kind of service, or I think they probably tip a glass of water or something and think about the people that they don't have anymore.
Absolutely. And it is part of the journey. Mm-hmm. There's a big part of the training that we are trained to allow people to choose that route as well. If they no longer want to, you know, fight, for lack of a better word, to be here, then they need to be given permission to go. I haven't encountered that. The majority of the clients I've worked with were in early stage diagnosis that really needed guidance. Where do I go from here? I have eaten horribly my whole life. Can I get help on, you know, resources for eating better? I'm emotionally afraid. I'm terrified. I have anxiety. You know, they've been very, very simple cases. But one thing I will say is, through the journey of coaching cancer patients, I found my bigger calling, and that is not exclusively for cancer patients and cancer coaching. My calling, even greater than that, is preventing. You know, in the first place, what do we do to not reach that point? Finding our reawakening our life purpose and reigniting our passion for life is really where I'm currently invested in putting my energy. And so it's not just for people that have been diagnosed, but anyone that feels somewhat at a lull or a stale point in their lives.
I'm thinking of the stressors to which you attribute your cancer, however, and they were part of your life, but not necessarily under your control.
Absolutely.
And that can be the case.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no way that we don't have an awareness that something's off, or that we are unfulfilled or unhappy or scared or anxious. We have an awareness of that. Sometimes we can't do anything about it in the moment. But if we have an awareness, that's enough for us to shift the way we view our desperation. A lot of us view it as a doomsday thing, or this is it. I'm not going anywhere from here. And so my motto is turning trauma into triumph, because trauma is there's no way that we would live without trauma. We are human. We are meant to experience hardships. Otherwise, how boring would life be? And so trauma is part of the experience, but how do we handle the trauma?
So with some of your clients, you must have had at least minimal interaction with their doctors.
No, I don't have any interaction with their doctors.
Not at all?
Nope. No,
you don't hear from the doctors? There's no conflict?
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. My role is not to interfere with the treatment at all. My role is to provide emotional and mental support for the patient that is freshly diagnosed, has been diagnosed, or is preventing a diagnosis, and just sort of offering them the buffet what's the word I'm looking for? The buffet of opportunities, experiences, modalities, all of that.
Strategies, maybe.
Strategies, yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then have two sons that play music.
There you go.
That can help too, huh?
Music is a very big part of the healing journey.
And you play as well.
I do, yeah, a little bit.
A little bit anyway.
Yeah.
What training did you get to be a coach? Who trained you, and what was the program?
So the organization is called the BeatCancer.org organization. Mm-hmm. It was all online. There's videos online, and so you go through the videos, and you have some one-on-one email interactions, phone calls, with some of the trainers and the head trainer, Susan Silberstein. And then you get a certification, and you become listed on their registry. And at the moment, I have not, you know, actively pursued to renew for this year, because it expires in September, because I'm really focused on my school at Evergreen. I'm a full-time student there. And so any coaching I'm doing now that I've actually done the last couple months has been pro bono. It's just to support people that have contacted me that wanted at least initially some guidance.
And if people listening, someone listening, wanted to talk to you?
Sure.
Would you talk to?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we'll figure out how to make that happen a little bit later.
Absolutely.
And what are you studying in school?
So I'm studying, again, in the field of purpose empowerment, motivational empowerment. That's really my biggest passion, is motivating and empowering people. you know, I've been through various obstacles in my life, and it's not just the cancer journey, it's not just the immigrant journey, it's not just the cultural diversity, it's not just the woman journey, it's all of those together. And I think all of us are speaking the same language of wanting to be happier people.
So you did a self-exam 3 years ago and you found a lump.
Yes.
What if you did a self-exam tomorrow and found another one?
Sure.
How would your reaction differ, or would it differ?
Yeah, I mean, that's something a cancer patient lives with every day. We wake up every day with that, you know, somewhat anxiety, I guess, a minimal anxiety. And I've learned to live in the moment, you know, and that is the biggest lesson. I have much less fear about that. You know, the famous cliche, you can be hit by a bus tomorrow, and that is true. Once I got diagnosed with cancer, the last 3 years of my life have been so much richer and fuller and intentional than the last maybe 40 years of my life.
And that's like all of your life, just about.
To some degree, yes.
We don't want to put an age on you, awareness. But yeah. I think I'm figuring it out mathematically.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's all about awareness.
So how do people get in touch with you? A listener, how would a listener get in touch with you?
Yeah, so email is great. You can email me. Would you like me to give my email out?
Go ahead.
Yeah. So you can email me at falkdickerson@gmail.com. That's F as in Frank, A-U-L-K, D as in dog, I-C-K-E-R, S as in Sam, O-N as in Nancy, @gmail.com. And I have to say that because people have thought it was Salk Dicker Finn, or, you know, so the letters are always hard to, so it is, it's Falk Dickerson.
And for all those who were not quick enough with the pen, tossedsalad@kptz.org, and I know how to get in touch with Jasmine. We have a bit more time for music, and I think that's what I would like is, while you guys are playing, I would like for Jasmine to think of some good reason to have you back other than just the music. We've come to maybe the end of this conversation,
sure,
but I bet we could have another one. So think about what other one might be, so I can lure all three of you back.
I'd love to.
Yes,
yeah,
me three and or me four, or actually me five with Marla in the background.
Hey,
there,
Marla.
As always, hiding behind the computer monitor. Gentlemen, what have you to play for us next?
We're going to play two reels from the Shetland Islands that I don't remember the names of.
Thank you.
carry on, gentlemen.
All right. So next we're going to play a medley of three tunes. The first one is a slip jig called Billy O'Rourke is the Boy. It's also called Poor Nancy Died, but we don't go by the sad title. And then the second one is called 250 to Vigo. And the last one is a composition of mine called Butler Cove. Thank you.
cello is quite amazing. The sound of it is so rich and deep, and it just makes the whole room move. We have a little bit of time left for, can you do one tune rather than a long medley?
Yeah.
If you can do one tune without a long medley, then we have time for that.
Okay. What should we play?
Oh, and Dante's eyes are as big as dark saucers.
Yeah. Okay. We'll play a modern old-time tune called Little Mert, which was written by Sammy Brayman of the band The Onlys.
I have a question before you start that.
Yes.
Between the two of you, is it generally noted that Eros does most of the talking?
Yeah,
probably.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what's been happening here. I'm really glad I asked for that. That was very cool, especially the cello solo in the middle of it all. I hope you two record something before Dante goes off to Berkeley or wherever, Berkeley School, college, I mean, because I have in my hand, I have this recording of young people playing Scandinavian music. I just got that today. I have your friend, Friends the Bow Weevils have made a recording. I got that yesterday. So next, I want to get a recording by you guys.
Yes, we have a duo album that we recorded last year.
Oh, why don't I have that?
We're planning. We'll get you a copy.
That would be good.
You didn't leave one here when we were here last
year? Yeah, I thought we left one, but I guess we didn't, yeah.
Yes. I don't remember these things very well. Yeah. So it's now September, almost October. Actually, it's all so almost autumn.
It is.
Yeah, so happy autumn a little bit ahead of time.
Thank you.
Why don't you y'all think about, aside from wonderful tunes, you guys can certainly bring that, Jasmine, what we might talk about.
Oh, yeah.
I like the conversations we have.
Yeah,
so
I do too. Yeah.
You come up with a notion and we'll say 4 to 6 months' time.
Okay.
We'll do
wonderful.
This again.
Would
we'd
love that.
You could just keep doing it.
That would be wonderful.
All right.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would love that.
So Jasmine Falk Dickerson and Eros and Dante Falk. Thank you, all three of you, for coming today.
Yeah,
thank you for having us,
yeah,
Bill.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you so much.
This is great.
And the conversation with Jasmine likely will be on the Compass. You might have heard this. This is the news magazine that KPTZ produces. I do not. Other people do this. But I think the interview we had will be incorporated into a Compass.
Oh, wonderful.
Some week in the coming month or two. I have no idea when.
Wonderful.
And people can also hear the whole set, in fact, right now, I think, and for 2 weeks, by going to the website of the radio station and clicking on archives and following your mousy instinct
yep.
to where you need to go. So thanks a lot, all
thank
three
you
of you.
Thank you so much, Phil.
Yeah,
it's always
you.
Wonderful.
So drive up here. Thank you for making it.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure.
Okay.
Thank you.